Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Fridays. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I was reading this article by Robert Reich, and he was explaining why we just can't get anything done. You know, he said the House passed over 200 bills since the start of 2021, and yet just a small percentage of any of those bills have been able to be passed into law. And so it often frustrates the everyday person why we can't get any of these things accomplished, any of these things done. It's almost an impossible undertaking. But if the House can get it done and Democrats and Republicans can work together on a House level, and they have differences, but what makes it so doggone hard to get the Democrats and the Republicans on the Senate? Different laws? Different rules? Well, different rules of engagement?
Yeah, different rules of engagement. You know, the so-called cloture, which is, you know, in the Senate you're allowed to filibuster, which means you can talk, stand up and debate forever, and essentially...
Yeah, the green eggs and ham thing with...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you stand up and talk, and you end up deferring the consideration of bills so long that the people who want to put it up decide that they're not going to waste the Senate's time. They've got something else more important they want to pass, or they get pushed into compromise. And so that used to be the case, and the Senate got so sick of filibustering with some of the people who were so good at doing it, many of them Southern senators, that they decided to adopt a different standard, which was if someone basically says they're going to filibuster, we'll adopt a 60-vote, because it took 60 votes to sit the person down and make them stop the filibuster. So they decided to adopt a 60-vote requirement to pass a bill that might otherwise be filibustered. And, of course, there was always somebody there to say, well, I might filibuster this bill. So basically there's a 60-vote requirement for bills. And that makes it hard to pass things in the Senate. And, you know, it also... passage in the Senate is ultimate passage of a bill. So there's a great deal of focus of all the interest groups at the Senate level. When a bill passes the House, it's a much bigger body. It's harder to lobby. It's harder for people, interest groups, to put all their pressure on the caucus. Because, you know, when you have the caucus is all the people of the same party. And so the Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives controls the House numerically. They meet, they decide things they'd like to pass, they take a vote within the caucus to find out how they feel about it, and then they take it out on the floor, and things tend to pass, many of them, on party votes. But they know that all the pressure and all the interest focused on it will happen in the Senate.
You know, Sandy, you were talking earlier about how, you know, we need to change things in the country. And yeah, I think we all agree that we need to change things in the country. But we can't change things in the country until...
Well, some of these things, I mean, it doesn't happen quite this way in multi-party parliamentary countries, because instead of having two-party caucuses, there'd be five-party caucuses, and they all go off and have their own conversations. And to get a bill passed primarily requires a coalition between several of those caucuses to reach agreement on something. And they're much more committed, it seems, to actually getting things accomplished in those countries. And it's harder for one side to have a blackball, because typically you can form a coalition. If you can't form it, if the centrists can't form it with the Green Party and the Conservative Party, they can form it with whatever. You know, they can come up with different combinations. And so the interest groups don't have as much leverage.
You know, the interest groups and all of these things, and no matter how hard you try, you know, and I'm watching, and it's the same thing over and over. And the American people get frustrated, and, you know, and I talk to people who basically give up on things because they say nothing's ever going to change for us. And that's kind of where we are headed. It's one of the reasons why there's a lack of people who are willing to vote. because they don't even feel like they're part of any of this.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what tends to make people vote, it isn't the stuff that creates substantive things in America that are different, that are other than the social issues, which seem to be at the top of political activity. So we tend to get a fair amount of things accomplished. You know, states around the country are busily focusing lots of attention on abortion availability.
Yeah.
And making abortion, again, a very primary issue in states in which education and public welfare are seriously at risk. But do they talk about those things? No, because it's much easier to grab everyone's attention to talk about abortion access.
Sam, who do we have online?
Tom from L.A. is calling.
Hey, Tom, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, Earl. First off, we the people are the government, and we must never forget that. And I am a proud FDR Democrat. Sandy, first off, I would like to reframe what it is that you're saying, because I think that termination of a pregnancy is much more than what it is that it actually is. It's either a woman's choice or the government's choice in terms of what this whole issue is about. Many women do not terminate a pregnancy, but it is her choice. And the thing is, if we're going down that rabbit hole of women losing choices, then let's go back to the 1950s and 60s, where a woman had to ask her husband if he could have money in his checking, or if she could have a checking account even opened in her name. So there's a lot more to this whole thing than just, termination of a pregnancy. It's about the government controlling women, not only with their reproductive rights, but also a lot more.
Hey, Tom.
Tom, I didn't mean to diminish the importance of women's rights and the notion that the government. I agree with you.
We call it abortion rights. It's not abortion. It's a woman's right to choose, because there's a hell of a lot of women, 80% of the women, that actually choose to carry a child to term.
I don't disagree.
We fall into that narrative of, like, we're the pro-death party. You know what I mean? Because we all know what the opposite of pro-life is. It's pro-death. And that's not the way that this is. It's either a woman's right to choose, which is the noun, a woman, or it's got to be pro-someone else's.
Yeah. Well, I think I was talking about abortion access, but I don't disagree that the issue is far different than that. It really is a woman's right. And what's interesting to me is the same people who want to make sure that the government intervenes in terms of a woman's right to the medical treatment of abortion wants to make sure that the government doesn't intervene and require someone to have a vaccination, which is, so the woman is required. So the woman is required.
Or they don't like it when. I'm sorry.
Go ahead quickly, Tom.
Or they don't like it when, you know, the government's telling them to choose control their guns.
Right.
So
I agree.
It's funny that they allow that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to also say, part of the problem, of course, as we all know, is money and politics. I think that when you got these senators and congresspeople spending 80% of their daytime trying to figure out a way to make money so they can actually run for office and dial for dollars all day long, that is a huge, huge problem, because they should be spending that time legislating and talking about the issues rather than just dialing for dollars.
Hey, Tom, we got to go. We got to go to the break. Thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789 is the number. Sandy, you can respond on the other side. We'll be right back.